Broadcasting live from South Texas, this is your Petardcast. I am your host, Mr. Leonard Pierce, and if you lived through last week's episode, you can live through anything. For our eighth episode, we'll be joined by bicoastal humorectomist Tony Zarrett. He'll teach you how to alienate friends, silence lovers, and make total strangers fear your very haircut. We'll also be dipping into the Tidbits archives and taking a look at what celebrities who are our betters have been up to lately. There will also be comedy delivered piping funny by myself and Mr. Zarrett. There's literally nothing more noble you could do than to waste the next 45 minutes on tonight's Petardcast, a comedic steak tartare in a world of field greens. We're going to be heading back to another installment from the archives of Tidbits, the advice column that I wrote until 1989 for the New York Times, which was designed to give advice to the modern man. One of the most important aspects of modern manhood is being able to provide what is known as plausible deniability, which was a concept invented by rich white people in the 1980s. This is a process by which nothing that you do, no matter how flagrantly you have been caught doing it, is ever your fault. Plausible deniability is accomplished by simply and subtly shifting the blame for your actions onto someone else. In order to get you used to the process, I spent one column providing you with the following simple, all-purpose examples. No, you suck. No, you should be the one to apologize. No, you wrecked the car, let the dog starve, and bet your whole college fund on a cockroach race. No, you invaded Poland under false circumstances in 1939, triggering a scramble to strategically honor alliances that would eventually erupt into the largest and most destructive war in the history of the world. No, you appear to be an unemployable ne'er-do-well. No, you get a makeover in an attempt to be crowned trailer trash beauty queen of the season. No, you were responsible for the simultaneous assassination of the heads of New York's most powerful crime families, thus consolidating your nefarious hold on power. No, you have been described by critics as a delightful romp and fun for kids both young and old. No, you were manufactured using equipment also used to process peanuts, soybeans, and wheat and wheat gluten products. No, you come from the Latin word frux, meaning fruit, and are related to the Latin verb frui, meaning to enjoy. No, you were the best of times, you were the worst of times. No, you were observed by Officer Pendecki at 11:32 on the night in question, urinating onto the doorway of 714 West Vellum Avenue, and upon being questioned became belligerent and hostile. No, you, having adequately strengthened the position of the commons by the two safeguards of the tribunate and the appeal, revived, in the interest of the tribunes themselves, the almost forgotten principle of their sacrosanctity. This you did by reintroducing certain religious sanctions, long fallen into disuse, and then proceeded to make the principle of inviolability legal as well as religious by a further enactment that an assault upon a tribune, an aedile, or a member of the board of 10 judges should carry a penalty of death or exile, the property of the offender to be sold at public auction. No, you are a small industrial city in Midwestern Ohio with a population of just under 200,000. No, you shut up. Now it's time for another installment of Celebrities Are Our Betters. Some of you have written to ask me how much our betters are celebrities. That is, how much more important than us, the non-famous, are celebrities actually? The answer is infinitely more important. They're so much more important that if only we didn't live under this tyrannical system of democracy, they could make all the decisions about our daily lives that kings used to make. And popes. I think that every minute of your day that you don't spend either sleeping or listening to this podcast, you should spend talking about, thinking about, and interacting with celebrities, but not interacting with them on in a personal way. Like, don't bother them because they value their privacy. I mean, like, reading about them and thinking about them and watching them on television. So we're going to start out with a little an appetizer here from my favorite celebrity magazine, OK Magazine. This one by the great Mary Beth Quirk is entitled Jennifer Garner Books It to the Library with Her Girls. So that's a pun because they have books in a library. Jennifer Garner made sure to help foster her daughter's love of literature yesterday, taking Violet and Serafina Affleck, Affleck is spelled with three Fs, to the local public library in Pacific Palisades, California. Violet looked quite happy with her haul as she toted home some choice tomes. And then there are photos of Jennifer Garner yanking her children to the library instead of, you know, just buying them books like a decent rich person should. Whether she and husband Ben Affleck, this time spelled with only two Fs, maybe they inherit an extra F with each generation. So Violet and Serafina's children will have four Fs in their name. Are taking their girls to the park or the ice cream parlor. Jen and her little family always look like they're having fun. And then there are some photos of them at various places looking like they're having fun. I don't know why Mary Beth Quirk thinks that's necessary. I believe you. I believe that they always look like they're having fun. With Vi's armful of books, we're sure the Garner Affleck family had plenty of bedtime stories to choose from last night. That'd be a safe assumption. Well done, Mary Beth Quirk. Let us move on to a big story this week. We're gonna cover E! Magazine's take on it, but the headline is Josh Duhamel, sorry for being a douche on a plane. He doesn't mean that literally. He was not actually... I suppose he might have been used to refresh someone's vagina on the plane, but... What they really mean is that he was being a jerk, because apparently, we'll get to that. Josh Duhamel's character in Transformers laughs in the face of danger. Josh Duhamel, the actor, reportedly laughs in the face of flight attendants trying to be polite. That's another nice little literary technique that author Natalie Finn used there. The actor's official statement is that he's, quote, sorry, after causing a disturbance on a flight from New York to Lexington, Kentucky, where he refused to turn off his BlackBerry and ended up being escorted off the plane before it took off from JFK International Airport. Hey, man, just charter a flight, man. Just charter it. Or drive. It's not that far. A rep for Duhamel, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, I don't know who this guy is, tells E! News that the Life as We Know It heartthrob was texting someone about their flight being delayed. And if you believe the eyewitnesses, he must have been very perturbed. There's a link here that says photos, what a douche, but I'm not going to click on it. TMZ reported today that a fellow passenger said Duhamel was very rude to an attendant when she asked him three separate times to turn off his phone, ultimately laughing in her face. I'm assuming that means that Josh laughed in her face and not the phone, but maybe he's got a ringtone that laughs in people's faces. The attendant then called for backup, and the plane, which was already on the runway, so how delayed could it have been, drove back to the gate, where two officers escorted Duhamel off the plane. According to another witness, Fergie's lesser half, yesterday at least, was watching the Miami Heat-Cleveland Cavaliers game in an airport bar before boarding the flight. Maybe he was just super bummed about LeBron embarrassing his former team. It's LeBron James's fault. Now the big story, the big headliner of this week. Miranda Lambert is going to get married. I assume that you know that Miranda Lambert is a country singer of some sort. People Magazine reports that Miranda Lambert on marriage, I'm ready to just do it. That's what we call a cultural referent there. Miranda Lambert, writes Sarah Hamill, is champing at the bit to get married. That's even more excited than chomping at the bit. or stamping at the bit. When asked what she's looking forward to most about married life, the country star, whose fiance Blake Shelton popped the question last May, she said, being married. Let's review that for a minute, because I think you might have nodded off during this segment, as so many people do. Someone actually went to this person, maybe on the phone, maybe via email, maybe in person, and said, what is it about being married you most look forward to? And she said, being married. That's what she looks forward to the most about being married, is the being married part. And they printed that just like it was news. I'm looking forward to getting married, she told reporters at a press conference after the Grammy nominations were announced. You know, just doing it. We've been engaged 6 months already now, and it's kind of flown by. I'm looking forward to taking that next step and becoming a woman and moving on in life. Lambert, 27, which most people would say you're already a woman by that point, married or no, also told of the chivalry Shelton, 34, is already showing even before they say their vows. Lambert was nominated for a Grammy this week for her hit The House That Built Me, a song, sorry, I always get choked up at weddings, originally meant for Shelton. I'm so lucky that I was the one who got my hands on it, she said of the tune. The song was pitched to Blake originally for him to cut it, and when I heard the song, it just hit me so hard. I had a crazy reaction, and I started bawling. Just to clarify again, if you nodded off there, it was the song that hit her so hard and made her start bawling, not her fiancé. It takes a lot for me to get to a crying point when I listen to music. Me too, I don't even know what my crying point is. But it was just one of those songs that I had a feeling about. Lambert wonders, though, if her fiancé doesn't have a little remorse over his generosity. Luckily, I have a great fiancé who handed it over to me, Lambert said. I'm sure he wants it back at this point. You know what, Miranda, don't even worry about it, because he's going to get all the money anyway.
Greetings, capitalist pigs. Bet you are not expecting to hear from us, eh, American running dogs? I will wager that you are choking on your jumbo-sized carbonated beverage treat now at the surprise you feel. Perhaps you thought we were no more, isn't that right, imperialist roder? Well, you are very much mistaken. We do not wish to blame entirely you for our lack of communication. We will freely admit that much of the glorious people's revolutionary fault is our own. We have been moody and out of sorts for the last 20 years or so. We have lost our traditional verve and snap, the elan and pep for which the Communist Party was famous all those many years. Also, we are very hungry. Let us be honest with you, capitalist pigs. We are not what we once were. Our beloved motherland of Russia has been placed in the hands of the criminal gangsters who used to sell us pantyhose in the middle of February. China has backslidden and now functions largely as an off-site production facility for Walmart and other bumpkin-centered retailers. Cuba survives only so long as Fidel has regular access to the blood of Ecuadorian orphans. And East Germany is now only regular Germany. But let us ask you this, decadent tools of the exploiter class. Aren't you unhappy as well? We have seen the new people that you are flirting with. Al-Qaeda. What kind of name is that for an enemy? Uncle Joe. That is the name for an enemy. Red Menace. Those people have no staying power. You think you will still be afraid of them in 50 years? They're, how you say, flashing in your pan. We fought them already in Afghanistan when you sent them after us. And let us tell you something. They're like Moscow University on Lenin's birthday. No class. Oh, sure, they knocked down a few of your skyscrapers. Big deal. We used to plot to wipe out your entire civilization every day. And have you seen the kind of propaganda they inspire you to produce? You've gotten soft. Where are the I married a communists, the Red Dawns of today? We used to be so good together, Western degenerate slaves of the plutocracy. Remember the Cold War? Quite a bit colder for us than you, admittedly, but... Well, with the exception of those of you who lived in International Falls, Minnesota. But remember the crazy hysteria where you were worried that we were going to poison your water supply with fluoride? Honestly, what was that all about, bourgeois scum? Did you think we were going to conquer you by making your teeth excessively clean? Remember all the great iconography you used to have? Is there a red under your bed? And are there Bolsheviks in your bathroom? All those great posters. All you managed to come up with for the new guys is a stupid colored bar. It's like you're not even trying anymore. It could be that way again, greedy monopolists who oil your perfidious machinery with the blood of the workers. We still have all the uniforms, many of the tanks, and a couple of the nuclear weapons that haven't been lost, used as kindling or sold to perfume smugglers. We have lots of great propaganda. All we need is a little cash infusion, and things could be good again between us. It's only a loan, filthy slave drivers of the industrial plutocracy. We would pay you back as soon as we got a couple of our satellite nations back, and we could be great again. Think of what it would do for you. Think of what it would do for us. Also, I would like to reiterate, we're very, very hungry. Choke on your own corruption, capitalist pigs. Karl L., Boris P., Ivan K., and Václav A., the International Communist Conspiracy. All right, welcome back to the Petardcast. I am joined by this week's special guest, and a special guest indeed he is, Tony Zaret, recently relocated to New York City. How are you doing?
Okay, I'm doing okay. A little hungover, but it's one of those kind of hangovers. It's not really a headache hangover. It's just everything's kind of moving slowly hangover. So it could be
a Quaalude hangover.
Yes, that's what it is. I shouldn't have taken so many of those reds.
Yeah.
Blues last night, or whatever.
Remember that was a fun time in American history where you could call pills by their color. Now they're all white.
Right. You don't know what they are. Everything's white. They should start.
Just throw them back and hope for the best.
Drop some orange sunshine. Golden age of drugs.
Well, why don't you, for our theoretical listeners, why don't you identify yourself? Tell us who you are and what you do.
My name's Tony Zaret. I don't know. I just got a job writing promo commercials at the USA Network. I've been doing that now for 1 week. Although I'd been worked there before, maybe I guess like 4 years ago. I was at ABC and I got canned there, and so. I guess that's what I'm doing now.
What is your favorite show on the USA Network?
I hadn't watched any of them. I watched like 10 hours of USA Network shows last week. And I think that the one that was entertaining to me was White Collar. I thought that one was kind of enjoyably stupid.
Did you put that in one of your promos?
Yeah, enjoyably stupid. I don't know. I'm sure that would... Stupidly enjoy. I don't know. Sorry. All right.
Spacing out a little bit. You've just returned to New York after living in Los Angeles for a while. Why don't you compare and contrast the two for us?
Okay. Great. This is something I could talk about. A lot of people say that.
I know it's uncharted territory for comedians to talk about New York versus LA, but.
Yeah. This is. Yeah, I guess also I'm a comedian. I'm a failed comedian. Well, I'm still pushing away at that, so I guess that's the other thing I do. But people like to, I think in New York, say everything in L.A. is shitty and phony or something, but I think it's because they go to L.A. and they just go to, like, they hang out in, like, Beverly Hills and the San Fernando Valley. It is shitty, but... There's some really nice parts of L.A. that are kind of like New York, like Silver Lake and downtown L.A. And I think the biggest thing about a difference is that the homeless people in L.A. are way crazier than the homeless people in New York. I think people in New York kind of take it as a point of pride that they have crazy homeless people running around, but they can't hold a candle to the L.A. Homeless lunatics.
Well, it gets cold in New York, you know, so they have to expend a lot of their crazy energy just, you know, keeping alive, whereas in L.A. it's warm all the time. So.
Right, it weeds out the truly loony bums, I feel. Your New York bum in L.A. first would be like running Paramount. It's a lot of work to be homeless in New York. And also in L.A., it doesn't seem like anyone has a job or anything. So really, the bums have to be crazy, I think, in order to distinguish themselves from the 200,000.
The normal unemployed person wandering
right.
the streets.
Yeah. And also, you can't always tell if someone's homeless, or I think there are people in L.A. that just walk around acting crazy in hopes that someone's just going to put them in a movie or something.
Right. Yeah, that permanent underclass of put me in your movie people.
Yeah, especially this kind of creepy. I feel like you see them wandering around Hollywood. You know, they're like 50-plus years old, you know, and they're riding around on a unicycle. Just hoping that Michael Bay's making a movie about a unicycle cop and he's going to drive by and pick him up.
Yeah, so. That's actually a pretty good idea, I think.
Unicycle cop. Yeah, actually, I hope he's not listening. Cause,
that's high concept.
Yeah.
You know, and God bless movies for actually still finding a way to put those people in, you know, in the background every once in a while. It's kind of like the LA equivalent of welfare, you know, every once in a while.
An extra. I think I've known people that were extras. A friend of mine was an extra in the movie Hollywood Homicide. It was a stupid movie where Harrison Ford was a detective. And sure enough, we watched the movie. We froze frame. And there's a scene of him staring, my friend staring straight at the camera. Well, Harrison Ford is shooting at something with Josh Hartnett.
Well, you know, the weird thing is that they always put people like that, you know, the eccentric extra types, they put them in movies that are set in L.A. to establish that L.A. is quirky and crazy, you know, and I'll look at all the crazy people there are in Hollywood. But yeah. The only reason those people are there are, you know,
right.
to be in movies, you know.
Right. Like the guys, like people... rollerblading. I never saw anyone playing an electric guitar on rollerblades. That was my biggest regret, because movies had led me to believe that there was quite a bit of that, and I didn't see any of it. So I don't know if I wasn't in the right place, but that's, I guess, a myth about Los Angeles.
So where are you living in New York now?
I'm living in Harlem.
Harlem.
I'm right by the famous Apollo Theater. I've been here for 2 days.
Have you gotten booked there yet?
Well, I got to go to amateur night. I mean, I got to go up there, wait my turn, and hope that the Sandman doesn't sweep me off stage. You can't just walk into the
right.
Apollo.
I suggest that you try out some jokes about how black people are different than white people.
I don't know. All right. I was just going to go up there and sing like a Luther Vandross song, but I guess I'll do the old... I guess I'll go for comedy.
So I just finished reading the new Tribal Right or Tribal Rights of the New Saturday Night, that article that Saturday Night Fever was based on. Because I like to read,
oh, yeah.
I like to read really influential articles 40 years after they've, you know.
Right. I think I skimmed through that article one time when I found out about it.
Yeah, it's phony. Apparently, he made the whole thing up. I could tell because the first female character in the story is named Petula.
And,
no one in America is named Petula.
Right.
You know. So, but I was reading, there's this whole section about how these disco dancers go around trying to intimidate people, which is a strange image to me.
Like with their dancing prowess?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, with their floral shirts and their, you know.
I mean, they try to intimidate on the dance floor, or they just walk around
just
town?
Just generally, you know, to intimidate the gangs and whatever who are hanging around, you know. So, here's my question to you. If you had to intimidate someone, how would you do it?
I'd mean mug them.
Just I'd straight
mean mug them, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd kind of curl my upper lip up, and I'd kind of do like a evil guy eyebrows thing and just...
Would you make a sound?
You know what? I would let my stomach growl. I wouldn't eat for a couple of days so they could hear how hungry I was for vengeance.
See, that's the name for your unicycle cop movie.
Hungry for Vengeance. Or a really bad Judas Priest album.
All right. Occasionally on the show, we do a feature called J'accuse, in which I ask people to either defend or put into a positive light a historical atrocity that they had nothing to do with.
Okay.
So, the Rape of Nanking, what was that all about?
All right. Well, I'm going to give the positive side of it.
Okay.
Right? That's what this is I'm supposed
you
to do here, right?
You can defend it, or you can just say, well, here's what's good about it, you know? Put a good spin on it.
You know, the Japanese, you know, the Chinese had been walking around for God knows 1,000 years, kind of acting like they were better than the Japanese.
Acting like they own the place.
Right. Kind of, you know, giving off that thing like, hey, our shit don't stink. You know what I mean? And who among us hasn't gotten really annoyed by people like that? You know, in this day and age, maybe we would go online and make an angry flame, you know. I'm, you know, on someone's message board, but there was no message boards
right,
back then.
The Japanese
then.
Did not have that option.
Right. So it was all bottled up, and yeah, they got a little crazy. But, you know, one time I got really angry, and I peed on a church. You know what I mean? It's just sometimes stuff you don't always act out in a pot. That doesn't mean that your emotion isn't valid.
So you're saying that had they had a more creative or, you know, peaceful outlet for their rage against the snooty Chinese,
right?
Things wouldn't have gotten so bad.
Right. So no one introduced them. There was no art therapy back then. They couldn't go ride horses at some kind of a camp or rehab for anger management. This was all they had, was senseless violence.
Right. Fair enough. I think we can cross yet another atrocity out of the history books.
I'm not totally clear what the Rape of Nanking was. I know it's Japanese people killed a lot of Chinese people. Is that?
That's killed them and raped them.
Okay. All right. Good.
But you don't really have to know anything about it. That's secondary to this project, you know.
Right.
I think probably the less you know about it, the better.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm not so close to that I couldn't really dive into the character of a guy defending the Rape of Nanking.
So you're saying that the Zarets historically have not a lot of ties to central China?
No. I've never been to Asia. I've never been to any other continent, so.
Have you ever been to Chinatown?
Yes, I have.
Okay, well, that's close enough.
Never mind, I take it back.
All right, are you ready to have a dialogue?
Oh, shit. Yes, I am with this dialogue.
Hello? Is this Mal Harris?
Yes, who's this?
Are you at home right now?
What, a process server?
You could say that. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right over.
Get lost. Hello?
Mal?
Who's this?
What happened to you? I said I'd be right over.
I went to Blue Monday. I thought you were a process server.
Is that bar on 22nd? The place with the martinis?
It's a jazz club on Columbus.
Oh.
Look, who is this?
Death.
What?
You heard me.
You gotta be kidding.
Your time is at hand, Mal Harris. You must prepare to face your final reckoning.
I can't really hear you. You're in and out.
Sorry, cell phone. I said you must prepare to...
Hello?
Oh, I'm still here. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can't hear you. I'm hanging up.
Oh, hell. Mal?
This is Mr. Harris?
It's me, Death.
Oh, right. Can you call me back? I'm expecting a client to call.
I don't think you really appreciate the gravity
of... Can you get personal calls at your job?
Well, not as much, but...
Goodbye.
Mal? Mal Harris? If you're there, pick up. I'm serious. This is really important. I know you're there. You're only making this harder on yourself. Come on, pick up. It's really not so bad. You can't avoid this forever, you know. Hello? Mal? Pick up! Mal?
Is this death again?
Yes, thank God. I've been trying to reach you for days. I'm coming over right now.
Wait a minute.
What? I'm on a payphone.
How come you can't just, you know, show up?
Don't ask me. Esteban's in charge. When I think about the old days, honestly, it's enough to make you sick. Fucking bureaucracy, pardon my French. I have to jump through hoops even for easy stuff like a crib death.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. Time was that I could walk through a village waving my scythe and dozens would fall by the wayside. I don't even have to know their names. But ever since we got quality assurance over here, it's paper trails a mile long. And don't even get me started on the computers. Time savers my bony ass.
Wow, sounds rough.
Tell me about it. Did you know I don't even get to carry the scythe anymore? I have one of those electronic doohickeys you signed, like UPS uses. Tell me how that's supposed to improve my image.
I don't envy you.
Yeah, and, oh shit, hello? Mal? Hello? 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 Operator? Do they still have operators? I don't have another quarter. Shit. Oh, man. Can you call me back at this number? It's 478-31... Mr. Harris?
Yes, hello?
Your pizza's here.
I didn't order a pizza.
Someone in your building did, and they don't want it now.
What?
We made an extra. It's yours for $3. Buzz me up.
I don't think so.
Chinese?
You don't give me a lot of credit, do you?
You have to come out sometime, Harris.
Yeah, that's what you said 9 hours ago when you were the flower delivery guy.
God damn it. Mal?
Is this death?
Yeah, well, sort of.
I haven't heard from you in months. I figured you gave up. What do you mean, sort of?
I got fired.
Oh, man, no shit?
No shit.
It wasn't because of me, was it?
Of course it was because of you. You put me off my schedule for 9 weeks. You should see the backlog I generated.
Yeah, I feel kind of bad.
Don't let it bother you. I got plenty of unemployment coming.
So, what happens now? Will they send someone else?
Probably, but I wouldn't worry about it. You'll be some college kid. If I couldn't get you, you'll have no problem with him. You're practically immortal now.
You kidding?
Nope. It happens sometimes. You should be happy.
I am.
Well, listen, you beat me fair and square. You wanna, I don't know, grab a beer or something?
Sure, I'll be right down.
Really?
No.
Damn it!
Well, that's it for tonight's Petardcast, and thank you as always for joining me. Thank you, Mr. Tony Zarrett of New York, for bearing your soul and various other parts of your body. You can read more about Tony at newyork.channel101.com or by Googling Tony Zarrett and hoping for the best. Join us here next week for more comedic antics, frantics, and pedantics, when we'll present a new naming of parts, some hilarious, humorous goings-on, and the most amazing guest we can possibly afford. As usual, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, email me at guests@ludiclive.com. And if you just feel like yelling at me, the address is info@ludiclive.com. The Petardcast is available on ludiclive.com as well as in the form of a free download from the iTunes Music Store. This episode is dedicated to Mr. Alan Konigsberg and Mr. Boris Petrovsky. And thanks to you, the listener, for deleting the love letters and tax returns from your hard drive to make room for this podcast. I am your host, Mr. Leonard Pearson. If you're going to do it, then do it to death.